everybody. Welcome to I Like It Spooky Horror Podcast Indie Spotlight. I'm Brian.
I'm Leah Stalker.
I am Clint, and on this episode of Indie Spotlight, we are going to be looking around Leah's room to see what else we can talk about.
You're so fucking nosy. Could you stop?
Next time, she's just going to zoom the camera in.
What's in that? What's in the corner over there? What is that?
Which one?
I don't know. The other corner. I'm just playing a trick on you. My mom used to play on me. One time, my mom picked me up from school when I was like in ninth grade, and she was like, "Why'd you skip school?" And I was like, "I didn't skip school." And she was like, "Yeah, you did. You skipped school. I got a call." I'm like, "I did not skip school." And then she kept pushing me, and finally, I was like, "Okay, look, I'm sorry. It was fifth and sixth hours, so we walked to John's house. We had nothing going on." And she goes, "April Fools, you're grounded." She was just fucking with me.
Oh no!
Totally randomized. So that's what I was doing there—the old Jedi mind trick to see what you were going to say. Oh, that's my blah, blah, blah. All right, everybody, just kidding. We are not dedicating this episode to what is going on in Leah's room. I'm not for sure if any of us really want to know. We are going to be talking about a movie called Wieland. We also think it might be Wieland, so it's going to be referred to as both throughout this episode. And I'm just going to open it with this. I have some rules. I'm not going to go through all of them, but one of them is never date a woman who wears black socks. And another one is never trust a guy with a thin, scraggly beard. And that's how this movie opens, is with a dude with Coke bottle glasses and a thin-ass scraggly beard.
Well, there was probably some ladies wearing black socks, too.
I'm wearing black socks. What the fuck?
There you go.
I trust none, y'all.
On this episode of Indie, Leah just gets destroyed. I will say, though, the first thing that I have in my notes for Wieland is that the opening line is a banger. And that guy did have a scraggly ass beard. The first thing out of his mouth was, "I am charged with the murder of my wife and kids, and it is true." And I thought that was kind of cool, just because it was a lot of the movie you're like, "What happened? Who did it?" It was like, no, 2 seconds in, this is what's going down.
So this is a period piece set in the 1700s, late 1700s. And it's actually based on a true crime that happened. Did you know that?
I did not know that. You alluded to it, and then I instantly said, save it for the podcast when you explain this to me. Because you mentioned a book.
It's based on a book also, Wieland or the Transformation, written by Charles Brockden Brown. And there was some murders in New York. And he read the story, and he thought it was interesting, so he wrote this book. And it's considered by a lot of people the first gothic tale in America.
So my question is, in the movie that we watched, everything transpired post-Civil War.
Yes.
Now, you had mentioned that this original story, that this book that this was based off of, inspired Edgar Allan Poe, inspired Mary Shelley's Frankenstein, which was obviously before the Civil War. So is this story in this movie like just kind of adapted from that?
So this story is adapted from the book, which is based on this murder. You watch the movie, it has nothing to do with Frankenstein or most of Edgar Allan Poe's writings, but...
Or horror, really.
Those people that wrote those books... This writer was very influential on. He was one of the early writers that they read, and they're like, "Oh, I love this. I like his other books. I want to be a writer." So they kind of pinned their style after him, and it gave them a lot of ideas. And he wrote like 8 books and then died. He died at 39 from being an alcoholic. So he didn't live very long. And maybe 39 back in the 1700s is a long time. But yeah, he was very influential. One of the articles I stumbled across is from the Library of America, is talking about this movie. Not really horror so much. I mean, it's got some horror elements. He does kill his wife and kids. You know, there's spirits that they allude to. There's ghosts. They're hearing voices. You know, there's some sexual stuff going on in the movie.
I was going to say there is a lot of sexual stuff, which I'll get to in just a minute. But the one thing that I saw that was in here, too, is I have never seen a straw top hat.
Kind of threw me off. I'm going to be really honest, is that I'm fine with period pieces that open. And I was like, OK, this is fine. I like Jane Eyre. I like Pride and Prejudice. It's completely fine. I was completely in it. I was actually loved the costumes and the setting and all that. I thought that they did a very good job. But the top hat, the straw top hat, completely took me out, where I was just like, what?
That's a lot of fucking straw. That was a tall top hat.
It was.
There's several synopses, but here's just a short one from what IMDb. Religious fascism, schizophrenia, supernatural powers, and repressed sexual desire combine into a deadly family drama.
So you're pressing the sex here, so I'm going to jump around in the movie a little bit. There obviously were sexual undertones. There were two scenes. One is early on when Weiland, the main character, the dude with the tall straw top hat, the women were in the other room singing, and he was in the hallway. Was he masturbating?
I have no idea, because they were singing, which that's a whole nother fucking topic of conversation in this movie, but they were singing, and then one of the lyrics was, come.
Over and over, come, come. Come.
So he started singing along, and then he's sitting there like sweating. He's kind of shaking a little bit, like, and then he's just going, come, 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 come. And I was like, I don't know. Is he having a godly experience, or is he having, because one of those is a sister, so I don't know. That was one of the things that made it difficult straight from the bat. I'm going to be very honest, is that I got very far into the movie not knowing who the fuck was what. And that was the problem, was that this woman who is singing, and she's singing a lot, and then he starts, he's jerking it or having a moment. That's his sister, come to find out, because there's two of them. One of them is his wife, but she was on piano, but he's singing along with the other chick saying, come, 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 come. Yeah, that's his sister. So there's four main characters. There's two sets of brother and sister. I didn't know, A, anyone's fucking name. It took forever for them. And I thought that guy's name was Slew. I have him at S. I don't know what the fuck, because I had to put on the closed captions and they called him Slew, so I just owned it, and his name is Slew throughout. Slew and Clara, I didn't know their fucking names for a really long time, or who was related to who, or who was married to who. And that was a big issue, is the fact that, like I said, I love period pieces. I don't have an issue with period pieces, so nothing I say is going to relate in that aspect, but I wasn't sure if it was just my brain or if it was the storytelling being confusing. Were you guys able to pick that up right away, the relations or the names or anything?
No, so I'm going to go on record, and I'm going to say a lot here. I did not enjoy this movie. I have found some things out since that make me appreciate it more. I did not finish this movie. I got about 40 to 50 minutes in, and I said, I cannot do this anymore. But I'm right there with you, Leah. I was completely clueless on who was who. I followed in the beginning. There was a mom and a dad, and the dad, I think there was some sort of weird cult thing going on, and then I don't know if he killed himself or he just like disappeared or whatever. And then the mom, I think, took her life afterwards. So these kids were left as orphans, and then we fast forward into the future. They now have inherited the estate. But I didn't know who was who. I feel that this was produced, this came across, and Brian, I think you said it, we were talking earlier, that this was like a PBS special type thing. I'm cool with period pieces also, but this one was really lost on me. And it was almost like this was produced by like a local theater group. And I mean, who, although they were like fluent in the mechanics of filmmaking because they had some beautifully composed shots, they were well-versed in like After Effects. You know what I mean? You could tell that they were After Effects, the rain, the fire explosions, different things like that. Some of their lighting techniques were things that I employ in the haunt industry. So they were versed in that, in the mechanics, but I think they relied too much on like a theater visual and dialogue format or approach, which just does not translate into film. If you're in an audience watching it live on stage, and it makes a little more sense. And I'm not knocking theater, because I mean, I've always supported the theater. I've been a part of the theater. I continue to do so. You know, Boots is now involved as an active member in the theater. But again, the translation onto film as opposed to a live stage is very different. I just couldn't figure it out.
Yeah, this was released by Eternity Box Films. And if you're on their website, it says horror, mystery, and memory. And a little snippet says, we are dedicated to bringing classic American literature to life. These are stories that inspired the greatest minds in American history to think, to dream, and then to imagine. These books have never been made into films. They're great works that deserve to come alive on screen, and you can be part of it. So that, you know, they're asking for some help to fund the films. But I think any film that they put out, they're going to stick very close to the original writing, which for a movie, a book this old, doesn't always go well on the screen. Even Frankenstein, if you read the book, I feel like it's a lot different than the movie that came out.
Oh, it's extremely different.
So if they did Frankenstein, it's going to be something like this. It's going to be something that I feel like if I had a suit jacket on and I was smoking a pipe and was sitting on around a table on a PBS station, I would maybe understand it better if that was my mindset. you know, if I was more cultured in the reading of this literature and understanding, but I'm not. I watch Friday 13th Part 5 every other Saturday night. So
you talk about smoking a lot. I mean, last episode we covered Mangy Bones. You were smoking a cigarette on a horse in the Old West. I think next time I see you, I'm bringing a box of cigars and we're going to have a smoke session.
Yeah, that's fine. Yeah, just don't tell Tiffany. She gets mad when I smoke. Very period piece. Some odd music stuck in there, which for the time, maybe that's not odd. They didn't have fucking TV or the internet. Maybe they're just like, let's get out the whatever the fuck that instrument was and sing. That was what they did.
I will say that because in my notes, I did notate every time that another musical interlude, but I did kind of what you just said, Brian, is I guess it shows what they had to rely on, and it can be sort of haunting and add an interesting vibe to it. I like musicals. I think that singing is fun. The first time that it happened, I was like, okay, this is really cool, because they did a great job of, they would do these little vignettes while someone was singing that kind of I move the story along to a certain part. But I'm sorry, but by the end of it, I was like, here's another fucking musical. Oh, good. Judith gets her fucking 5 minutes of singing. And I think with love and care, it was a lot. It was an absolute lot. And then it got to the point where it felt like it wasn't moving the story along. And it was just
filler.
Yeah, it was filler. Are we just going bald? I mean, no, he spoiled it at the beginning, saying that he killed his wife and kids. He went into the bedroom. He choked out both of his children while reciting something biblical. I was like, fuck, like he just strangled both of his kids in the heat of passion. And I was so emotional about that. And then someone came and started singing a song and completely took me out of it. Any building towards emotion or giving a fuck that was created instantly depleted, because it was probably the 7th musical interlude that happened. It ruined it. It didn't add to it anymore. So I think that, and I guess when you're saying that it's theater, I get it a little bit more maybe, but make those choices just a little bit better and say, does this instantly halt everything that I just worked towards in building the scene? And the answer is fucking yes, it did.
One of the things I see from indie artists, and this includes myself when I write screenplays or anything, is it is very hard to edit yourself. It is your child. And that's the thing, is it's obvious that they were passionate about what they were trying to present, or not what they were trying, what they did present. But I think a lot of times indie artists, again, myself included, need to really buckle down and employ the edit yourself. Because one of the things I have here is the last note that I wrote down is, I said, some indie projects rely too heavily on story, acting, and dialogue. And I feel that a lot of these projects, more so than professional productions, need to also really know their audience and keep some of their focus, yes, true to their vision and their passion, because that's what indie is, but they need to keep some of their focus on being entertaining. And I will watch the best thing. I'll watch the worst thing. I'll watch anything. I love musicals. I love period pieces. Rarely do I walk away from a movie. And it was during yet another scene like you're talking about, where this song broke out and it just completely halted any tension that was being built. And I was like, I just can't do this. I just cannot do it. I paused it and I was like, I still have like 45, 50 minutes to go. So I don't want to sound like I'm bashing something. One of our mission statement with this, with Indie Spotlight, is to support and build up and bring spotlight to projects that might not otherwise get it. So I know I sound like a really negative tone. I just didn't care for this, but I see their passion. They were well-versed in the mechanics. Once I found out that it is based on these great literary works, it gives it some more weight and some more clout to me. But Aaliyah, that's a long answer, long-winded windbag for agreeing with what you just said. You can't have a moment like that and then bust out in a song on a rock about the wind. And you're just like, what?
I missed that song.
One more time. No, the thing is,
bust out about a song. Oh, go ahead.
The thing that we always kind of talk about when covering this stuff or any of the movies that we watch is, you guys always do your homework on stuff. You read up on it beforehand. And I've always said that I'm the person where I have to go into it blind, or else that will become, I know if I would have read about the Edgar Allan Poe Frankenstein inspirations, then I would have kind of been looking for that the entire time. So that, like I said, that's the kind of person I am. I do not do homework beforehand. I go in, I say, say, this is what you created. This is what you are giving to me to watch. I am just going to watch it. I remember loosely when you were presenting this now that you were like, oh yeah, kind of the inspiration for Frankenstein. I completely forgot that when I was watching this. I shouldn't have to do homework though to appreciate it. When we talk about a movie and I say, oh, I love this insight. I love this, you know, it should add to it. It shouldn't have to explain it all. It shouldn't have to justify it all. And so, no, this wasn't a, it wasn't a bad movie. Like Clint, how you're saying, like, I'm not going to come here. It was very much a period piece. This very much is Pride and Prejudice. Will they, won't they? What's going to happen? And there wasn't a lot of horror to it. It kind of got tossed in there now and then. But overall, I did feel this was a period piece, which was fine. I didn't do any of the homework. I didn't know that it was the inspiration and based on this book and this, that, and the other. Just going in it, watching it straight. This was Pride and Prejudice. Just people who needed to get their rocks off and get some stuff out of their systems would have helped a lot.
I'm usually like you, Leah, where I don't do a lot of homework on things, especially if I've never seen it. But that's what got me through this movie, is that I did the homework and I knew the movie's significance or the book's significance. And I had told Clint earlier, Finley was kind of in and out of the room, my 5-year-old, and there's nothing in this movie that's overly gory or sexual. You as an adult know what's going on, but as a child, you don't know what's going on. But I was telling Tiffany how it, you know, Edgar Allan Poe and Frankenstein, and Finley's listening and says, can we watch Frankenstein tomorrow? So if anything came out of this movie, it's that today we're going to watch Frankenstein. To me, that's a win. And it's a period piece. It's, I think I told Clint earlier, to me, what I would watch after Downton Abbey. So not really something that I would watch, not our wheelhouse. Then again, more people would probably watch this and enjoy it than would watch Darius and enjoy that. And we all like that.
Agree completely. And that's actually one of the reasons I am really glad that we are discussing this film, is because I feel that Indie as a whole, but especially with the movies, I feel that so far we've kind of hit some key points on the spectrum. We've hit kind of like the art house kind of experimental student film type thing. We've hit kind of like the professional, just not big box budget, box office budget, blockbuster. I couldn't say that. You know, we've discussed kind of these different stops in the spectrum of indie film. And I think this is yet another one, because to me, I use the word homegrown. And these people are no more competent. I'm no more competent than them. This kind of reminds me of Woodchipper Massacre, not in context, but Woodchipper Massacre. Lee, I know you probably haven't seen that. It's a schlocky, cheesy 80s movie, mid 80s. And it's kind of like when home recorders first became available, VHS recorders, and someone picked up a VHS recorder and they made a fucking movie. That is a homegrown movie. And this is the same. You see a lot more of it now because technology is so available. But like, Leah, your thirst traps and TikTok, or videos that we make for the podcast, or videos I make for, you know, haunted house stuff that I've done, I am no more talented than these people. So I am glad we're covering it, because I feel this is another stop in the spectrum. I think this is a homegrown film. I think that this is also made by, like I say, a professional theater group or someone very passionate about it. But I go back to the point I made about you need to know your audience, because like Leah said, I agree. I shouldn't have to do the homework to appreciate it. But once I found out from Brian that it was that inspirational Edgar Allan Poe, Mary Shelley's Frankenstein, I'm like, okay, now this has its place now. But as I'm watching this, I'm like, we're 20 minutes in and I'm thinking, is this a horror movie? And then I'm 40 minutes in and I'm like, is this a horror movie? You know, there's a couple of somewhat suspenseful sort of horror elements that surfaced, but I was just like, and that's why I just bailed on it. Horror does not need to be Woodchipper Massacre or zombies or mutants or zombie chainsaw hookers. If you as a filmmaker are going to make an indie project and market it as a horror film, then you need to pay attention and have some horror in there. That's how I feel.
And I don't even know that they are marketing it as a horror film.
Well, they submitted it to a horror podcast.
And just because we don't see the horror in it, when you look up the movie, there's an article on Rue Morgue. There's an article on Bloody Disgusting. There, you know, so like other people are seeing this as a horror film. And again, it's maybe not our wheelhouse. There's probably a huge group of people that are like, oh, I read that book and I read Frankenstein. And I don't like the movie Frankenstein because it's not true to the book, but they're going to watch this and they're going to be like, I love this because it's very true to the book.
Yeah, I was just talking recently about the conversation I had with a friend about trying to get them to watch non-horror movies. And I was talking more about film noir and pulp indie stuff. And they're like, I'm a horror snob and all I do is watch horror. And I'm like, no, you need to find the horror that exists in movies outside of the horror genre. But with that said, I watched this movie and I could not find the horror. I tried. But again, I didn't stick with it. You guys stuck with it till the end, so.
But I think the problem was that there were the horror aspects to it. But I think what was coming across a lot was the fact that something horrible would happen. Like, and it was cool when those things happened. So, like, they were in the woods. Slew. I still don't know what the hell is. Is it Wyland? No, he's Slew now. So Slew was in the woods, I believe, and he came back and he was desperately trying to figure out, like, did Catherine leave at any point, which is his wife? And they said no. And he said, I was in the woods and I heard Catherine. Someone was in the woods and heard Catherine's voice warning of death, which is cool. It's very, it's awesome. She was apparently sitting right there, had it moved. These horror moments would happen and then they would just move back over into Pride and Prejudice. They ignored their own story. They ignored their own horror aspects where it was just like, oh God, like something bad happened, but like, you know, is he going to marry the Baroness or is he going to fuck Clara? We don't know. So
it would happen and then it would cut to the sister masturbating to the red coat wanting a drink of water. You know, I'm like, what is going on?
Oh, but that red coat was fucking hot. So I get it. His name was Carwin and now I got to look up some thirst traps about him.
She knows his name.
I don't know his name, but I will go on record and agree with you. He was an attractive man. That was a pretty boy.
Would you have that scene? Oh, man. Wait, y'all. This man, cue the Lady Gaga music, poker face, whatever. But this man walks up wearing red. It kind of reminds me of like Phantom of the Opera, like the Red Phantom sort of thing. But he's decked out all in this gorgeous red outfit. He's looking cool as hell. Claire's just sitting there reading her book. She starts getting the vapors. It was so good. And then he's just like, he's like, might I have some water? And Claire's just over there, like lifting up her petticoat, jerking it. Who knows what's happening? I don't know.
Well, and that dude had skill. I've never seen a more seductive way to just ask for a drink of water, you know?
And then he, even when he's holding the glass and he's got the pitcher and he's like holding it like 2 feet above. It was so good.
You had said you did not feel like you'd ever watch this movie again. Right?
Me?
Yeah, you.
I don't think that I would watch it.
Just that scene. Pause, rewind.
Yeah, she's gonna watch everything that, what's his name?
Carwin. I think it was Daniel Carwin, because I had him as Daniel at one point or something like that. But Carwin, yeah, Carwin could get it.
She's gonna watch the Carwin cut.
That's all I need. But that also too, that actor was really fabulous. Like, all joking aside, he did from the moment he stepped onto the scene, he dominated every scene that he was in because he was fabulous. So I'm just gonna give him his flowers. That, all joking aside of thirst traps and things like that, I think he was just a very interesting character and a really great actor in that regard.
I agree with you there. And I think the sister too, I thought phenomenal acting from her too.
Clara?
The main sister, I don't know the names, the older sister, the one that the story seemed to kind of focus on. Yeah, she was an amazing actress also. But no, your Kerwin, Carwin. I think Kerwin, I think of the rubber chicken on Svengoolie, but... That reminds me of when I was a kid, my mom and aunt loved Dirty Dancing. And so we watched Dirty Dancing over and over and over and over. And then, of course, with the birth of the VCR, there's a scene there where Patrick Swayze gets out of bed and like there's a half a frame where you can see his schlong. And I'm sitting there. I'm like, well, you know, a kid and mom and my aunt are like, oh, pause. And look, it's right there. Do you see it? Rewind, pause, look. And I'm just like, what the fuck? What the fuck? We're just starting to scratch the surface of my trauma.
There we go.
These shows aren't for anybody's entertainment. They are for my psychosis.
So at the end of the movie, you find out, and throughout the whole movie, you kind of get bits and pieces of this. They were brother and sister. So what happened at the beginning, Clint, just to give you some backstory, is the dad had started his own religion. He went insane, killed himself or left. The mom kills himself. So the kids are put with someone else. They fall in love with the other brother and sister. But the one sister was always in love with the one brother that she wasn't married to. And I think she's the one throughout the film that is throwing her voice and making them think that they're hearing things. So eventually the one brother goes insane because he's kind of gone through this religious journey, but he's also lost his mind. He kills his family.
And he was trying to fill the shoes of his father, which is obvious from the straw hat that he inherited from his dead dad.
And Kerwin is just a visitor that's telling this story at the end, I believe.
He's just there to spice it up.
So there's all this sexual tension. There's all this, I don't love you. I love your brother, but I can't tell you. And yeah, there's all these other things going on. It's kind of lost because it's a little muddied up. You know, you lose it when you throw the music in there, but that's a theater thing, I feel like.
Exactly. That was my point from earlier. So what you're telling me is, and this is kind of a joke, but I'm being serious, is that at the core, this is the story about the fact that women are evil.
I thought that was the story.
Yes, we are.
Isn't that like the story of the Bible, you know, with the apple and all that?
That's a whole nother episode.
Yeah.
I'm going to say this. So I did go on record that I didn't enjoy this movie. I didn't finish it. I'm glad that you clued me in on the rest of it. And I hear that you do get to see him kill, you know, the kids and stuff. Well, I'm not glad that you get to see him kill kids, but I'm glad that there was actually some horror or something scary or something with some balls that came out of it. You know what I mean? But I will say this. You say they're going to be doing other projects. I will probably, I'm never going to revisit this, but I will revisit something else they've done because it sounds like they are coming from a historical place. And now I know how to kind of gauge and read what they're doing a little more. And it's actually inspired me to talk to you, Brian, and find out. I might pick up this book and try to read it because the story does sound interesting. It just did not translate well on film. But so it serves its purpose. It is inspiring. It is, what's the word? It's flattering. And it's that homegrown stop on the indie spectrum.
So they have a website, eternityboxfilms.com. And you can go through, you can kind of read their mission statement. And they have a thing, film licensing. So they have some books on there. And one of the books is called Crazy Bet and the Gentleman from Massachusetts. It looks interesting. But the other one is called Gore Orphanage. And if you read the synopsis, it's inspired by an Ohio urban legend. Gore Orphanage explores the delicate business of raising children well, the consequences of the breakdown of support for abandoned children, and the power of fire to cleanse and destroy.
So they're not necessarily sticking with Gothic period pieces. They're just kind of going all, bouncing all around history then.
The orphanage is run by a neurotic Victorian.
Oh, so it is that.
Yeah, so, but still, that sounds interesting. That sounds like it could be something, a period piece still, but more interesting. And if I kind of know what I'm going into, and there's a little heavier horror ornaments, that would be something that, again, it would probably be on after Downton Abbey on a Saturday night on PBS. It'd be something I could watch and enjoy.
Speaking of mythology and stuff, Leah, we just got done recording before this recording the next feature, you know, flagship show episode where we talk about the movie Green Slime. And in that episode, I relate a ghost encounter that happened to me out to the Nugget. So if you want to hear all about it and some mythology I learned about the building, then you're going to have to listen to that episode.
I absolutely want to hear about that. I want to know all that. See, I'll do homework on that. I'll find out all the cool haunted background stuff before I go to the Nugget. So when I see a ghost, I know exactly who they are. That sounds interesting to me.
They know me by name. So just say Clint sent me and they're going to go, oh, okay.
Oh, that's creepy. I love that. No, that sounds fabulous. The other thing that sounds fabulous is I do think I would, you know, Brian, how you're talking about other stuff that these people are going to do. I would check it out. So I watched the whole movie, obviously. I gave it my all. I think that the only thing that this movie might have really needed was, and Clint, you brought it up earlier, I think it just needed better editing. And I think that it needed them to, it felt like they kind of assumed I knew what the hell was going on, which just always assume I don't. Because one other thing that they did is that all of a sudden Slew was wearing like an eye patch and chainmail and a fur coat. And there was another one where Payal was wearing a crown. And I thought, okay, are they going deeper into their like psychotic breakdowns? What is happening? Like, I genuinely thought it was something like that where you felt like you were, no, they do fucking plays as fun because they didn't have TikTok to look at. These people would do plays is that, but I had to really work hard to figure out why the fuck this man had an eye patch all of a sudden. There was no explanation whatsoever. And so there was a bit of assumption that you knew what was going on, or maybe, I don't know what it was, but it felt like with a lot of it, they just assumed like, no, we mentioned this person one time before. You know who we're talking about. You know this and that. And it's like, no, just like crumbs. Just give me crumbs so I can figure out what the hell is going on. I shouldn't be an hour and a half into the movie and I just now figured out, okay, this is Clara, this is Catherine, this is Payel, this is Slue.
Well, and to your credit, you are an admitted reader. You know, Brian and I, we don't sit down and go through novels often at all. So if this is kind of like a direct translation from a novel, then you being an avid reader, you think you would pick up on those things. No, I think we're just kind of like illustrating each other's points that where you need to focus on being entertaining also. You can't just, like you say, assume that everybody knows what's going on. But I just want to clarify, because I'm pretty sure I know what you're talking about when you say that you agreed about the editing. You're not talking about like, oh, this transition should have been smoother. You're talking about content, like going through, like I was saying, and this part of the story is useless, so we can take this out. It drags on. It doesn't serve a purpose. You're talking about content.
I'm so sorry. I should. Yes, exactly. Thank you for clarifying that for me. Not the film itself, the effects and all that looked fabulous. I think that the story itself needed editing. Like you said, if there is a scene where it's not really moving something along, if perhaps it's a the 13th, you know, music interlude, maybe we step back from that just a little bit so you can edit down for time. But then in that free time, I understand that you're trying to stay perhaps true to the source material, but you have to, if you have to make that little bit of a change to be like, hey, no one's going to know that they do play. So we need to like add in this line or add in this little scene of them doing a play so that people know what the hell is going on. Because in Little Women, I'm pretty sure that they did that where they would go and dress up and they would do. So it's not a weird concept that these people would do plays. Like that makes sense to me. But when you just have someone appear with a eye patch when all this weird shit is happening and I'm like, okay, did he go into the woods and get knocked in something? Did I miss it? What happened? Yeah, it's just, can you could still be true to your source material, but then add in just that little bit of extra nugget of context so that people know what's going on.
You need to help along uncultured swine such as myself. I mean, maybe they were like, uncultured swine such as Clint are just, they're just gonna be watching green slime. He's not gonna be watching this film. So there's no, we're not going to waste our time in trying to explain it to him. And I'm over here going, what's going on?
But like you said, and this is, I'm not going to say I am the smartest person around, but like I said, Jane Eyre is one of my favorite books, Pride and Prejudice, like all of those period pieces. I don't shy away from those. I do read avidly, you know, I'm at like 32 books for the year so far. So I am an avid reader. So
I don't see any books sitting around your room.
It's on a Kindle.
I don't see a Kindle either.
I'm going to have to get a green screen if you don't stop peeking at my bedroom while we're filming. This is not how this is going to go down.
What's under the blanket? It moved.
My cat, probably. But that's the thing, is that I am pretty good at picking up context or linking these things together. But if you give me nothing, then what am I supposed to do with it? That's the thing. So it's not just, oh, you're uncultured. You said this, not me. I'm not calling you uncultured, saying, oh, you know, you're uncultured, you can't pick it up or anything like that. I think that I'm pretty good at picking up these things, and I was lost a lot of it. A lot of it. But it's not that it was bad. It's just, it needs tweaking. Just a good tweak.
I think one of the most interesting things about this whole experience of this movie and this conversation is Brian is usually the I hate A24 style, I have to think and pay attention and figure out what's going on movies. And he's the one who's going, well, no, this is what happened. Well, no, you didn't know this? Well, this is because of that. This is completely like Freaky Friday, like flipped around upside down.
So Weiland premiered in January at the Modern Language Association in Philadelphia, and last year in September, excerpts of the film were shown at the University of Nottingham's Charles Brockden Brown Conference in the UK. I don't know anybody that goes to either of those places. I would imagine they're not going to show this at a Flashback in Chicago. If you like horror literature and you like to read and you like old gothic tales, this is definitely something you want to check out. If you like PBS, if you watch Downton Abbey, this is probably something you'd check out.
I love PBS. I grew up a PBS kid. I love PBS. Interesting, completely unrelated side note is my oldest, who is in 11th grade, is currently reading Mary Shelley's Frankenstein.
Everyone's kid is getting into Frankenstein, and I'm here for it. I love that.
I want to go watch Frankenstein. What are you talking about?
Yeah, you're going to go watch Frankenstein here in a minute. NECA just put out a new Frankenstein action figure accessory kit. Another one with a chair.
And there's a new Universal Monsters 4K box set coming out.
I almost talked about that on the news.
I think that Universal's, like in Florida, they're actually creating a whole additional monster area. And also, I know that this might not be up in your guys' wheelhouse, but it is for mine, is that they actually have a new movie that just came out that I think it's called Lisa Frankenstein. If y'all have seen that, which it looks really...
Have not.
Okay. It looks absolutely amazing. And it's from, I can't remember her name.
It's Zelda Williams. It's Robin Williams' daughter as a director.
Yeah. Yes!
Oh, I didn't know that.
Absolutely. So it's a very 80s, very fun looking thing. So I'm really enjoying this resurgence of Frankenstein that's happening right now in the world.
Well, and that's kind of full circle why I do appreciate this Ice Wheelan Wyland, however you pronounce it, movie, because the influence from their source material lives on to this day. Again, what they covered had nothing to do with Frankenstein, but that gothic literature, the Edgar Allan Poe, the Frankenstein, these early writings, H.P. Lovecraft, you know what I mean, still inspires today. In fact, Brian just shared with me a clip where there is a new SpongeBob episode coming out or has come out where SpongeBob has the Necronomicon, which I got to go watch that. So, I mean, you know, H.P. Lovecraft is inspiring something fun on SpongeBob today. This project, it does hold weight and it needs to exist. I'm trying to salvage it because I don't want to like, this is a piece of shit, because that's not my standpoint. I just, you know.
I feel like this is something that maybe our friend Brian Clark, who's an avid reader, would enjoy. There are people that will enjoy this. I mean, I kind of liked it. It was different.
But Brian Clark also likes demoniacs.
Well, yeah. But...
At the end of the day, I'm going to say that I did, like, I liked it. I finished the movie. Yes, there were some points I'm not trying to pick. I keep picking at the musical interludes only because I did not dislike them. I just think that they could have been used more sparingly or in a better way to really highlight.
Transition.
Yes. To transition and I think to highlight. I think that it got to the point where I felt like it was just, okay, well, now Judith had it in her contract that she needs to sing a song for 3 minutes. So we're going to put that in. And Claire, like, I don't know if it was actually the actresses that were singing. Everyone had a gorgeous voice. It was very lovely. I just felt like it went from being a very cool, like, way to set your film apart to being something that they relied on too heavily. I'm not trying to pick on it or anything like that with the movie. I enjoyed the movie. Like I said, I just think that it could have been streamlined a little bit more. And then I think that it would have been a lot better. But it also did feel like when there were the moments of horror, and I'm not even the person where it's like, I need more horror. It had a decent amount of horror to it. The issue was that something horror related would happen and then they would ignore their own storyline and continue just living life the way that it was. So then it felt like two separate things were happening, where here's the drama of who's Clara gonna marry, and then here's the drama of this. It felt like, I think that's a good way of putting it, is it felt like two stories that were kind of just merged together in maybe not the most enjoyable way. But overall, it was good. I did enjoy it. I liked it. I kind of mentioned it to Brian, and I always bring this movie up. Something it reminds me of is The Witch, where it kind of keeps you on edge throughout. It has some moments of horror, but I felt like in The Witch, the difference was that you became a little bit more unhinged as the movie continued on. All of the characters became more unhinged as the movie went on because all of these weird things were happening. And I think that's all I wanted from this was a little little bit more was that if you're hearing people in the woods and mysterious voices, and then you're just continuing on like life is fine, that's weird to me. That feels like you're ignoring your own story. But overall, I enjoyed it. It wasn't bad.
You guys both watched it to the end. I did not. Did he get hung? Did Whelan get hung in the end? What happened at the end? Because the movie opened with him, you know, admitting that he killed his family, and you see an image of a noose. He's in jail. He's got the jailer outfit on, or the prisoner outfit on, I'm sorry. Did he get hung?
He actually, and this was one thing that made me mad, was that he was in jail. He was wearing that little jail outfit. Suddenly, he's at the house. I have no idea. That was another one of the things that kind of pissed me off. It was because I was like, how is he suddenly out of jail? He arrived, and then he was killed. So at the end of the movie, it was Slew was killed, Catherine was killed, the children were killed, Clara survived. And then she ended up marrying Payel, who was going to be married to the Baroness, where they said that the Baroness died, but she actually did not die. But then she did die in childbirth. So Clara got what she wanted. She married Payel. She's raising the Baroness's child. And then Karin took Clara's diary. He went to go sell it because he was like, this is going to condemn you because this is your diary. And she goes, no one's going to believe you anyway. And then he carried on.
Lady Evil, evil. She's a magical, mystical woman. Women are evil.
Was that in Green Slime?
No, that's Dio.
That was the long and short of it. Sorry, spoiler alert to everyone, but it did have, for Clara, a happy ending. And Clara was the main protagonist, where she was having the most issues. It kind of focused on everyone else, but Clara, through evil, evil woman ways, got what she wanted. And then she pretty much just told Carwin, no one's going to fucking believe you anyway. Do what you're going to do. Go sell it. I don't give a shit what you do. I got my man.
Wow. So this is an interesting thought. What if never mind. You already said this, Brian. This was based on a true story. So not only is it, you know, an influential literary thing, based on a true story.
Now you want to watch it?
No.
No?
No. No, I don't.
It's definitely not for everybody.
We love your honesty, though. No, and that's completely fine, because how many times have I, you know, watched stuff and I've been like, oh, I probably won't do that again. That's completely fine. That's the fun of horror, is how many, you say horror and everyone's automatically going to think of something, but there are so many nuanced, different layers to it, and how much horror you get. And so that's the beauty of horror, is that there is literally something for anyone. And this is for someone. It wasn't for Clint. It was kind of for me. It's for someone. Someone out there is going to watch this and they're going to love it. It's going to be just the right amount of horror and just the right amount of singing for them. They're going to sing along every single time.
It's no Cannibal, the musical, but the musical is all right.
Love that reference. Love that reference so much.
In the tradition of Friday the 13th, part 2, and Oklahoma, comes the first intelligent film about cannibalism.
You know, I happen to know a very useful tool to help people on their journey to all these facets of horror and different fades of horror. Do you guys know what that tool is?
No, what is it?
Brian, you don't know what the tool is?
No, I was taking a drink of coffee.
It is a tool full of tools. It's our podcast network, the PFPN. So let's hear from them.
Tool full of tools.
You're listening to the Prescribed Films Podcast Network, home to hundreds of hours of free podcast entertainment. The shows on this network all have a common goal, providing you with the best discussions about movies and other forms of entertainment media. The PFPN hopes to fill your earholes with audio joy. Visit our website with links to all the other amazing shows at www.thepfpn.com. Thanks for listening.
Oh, Slew had killed himself, says my notes. He didn't get killed. He got killed. See, and I blanked on that for a hot minute where I was like, I don't know what the fuck happened to Slew.
The people that made this movie are listening, but you're like, who's Slew?
Right. His name is Nathaniel or something. You know what I mean?
I don't know what the fuck his name is.
Slewden. They called you Slew, Slewden.
Wait, so is Slew just a name you completely made up, or is that what you think it might be?
No, Slew is what the closed captioning said, but also the closed captioning was wrong a lot of the time. But it said S-L-U, so I was like, his name is Slew now, and then I couldn't figure... They don't say the names a lot. I literally was so far into the movie, but my notes are priceless. Catherine was being a slut with Carwin, that's what.
Slew probably means like to masturbate in 1700s.
Maybe.
And you just said masturbation like 50 times this episode.
Right. Slew. Oh, Slew.
You ever watch Futurama where they say snoo snoo?
Snoo snoo. The spirit is willing, but the flesh is weak.
Now that we've heard from our podcast network, we're going to send it over to Slew for a wrap up. What do you think, Slew? That's your new nickname. That work for you?
Who? Me?
You. Yeah, Slew.
I don't want to be called Slew. We just said that maybe it means something dirty. I made that word up. The closed captioning gods figured that one out. I don't know what Slew means. If anyone knows what Slew's actual name is, please send it to puremacabre@gmail.com.
So if you like off-the-wall movies, this is your place, because I don't feel like we could have gone any further from episode 1 to episode 5. Is this episode 5?
Yeah, I think it is. And you're right. Yeah, this is the opposite end of the spectrum as far as movies are concerned. Yeah.
There's a couple stops in between. But yeah, if you got through 1 and you made it to 5, you have no fucking clue what 6 is going to bring. Because where do we go from here?
Like Mr. Burns. Excellent.
We like keeping them on their toes.
You know the spew. Like and subscribe and all that good stuff. And they didn't have the internet back in the 1700s. So if you want to sing us a song.
Wait, hold up. No, I'm going to interrupt you. Time out. In spirit of Wyland, what we need Brian to do right now is, instead of reciting that you can find Pure Macabre and Mishmash and the I Like a Spooky Horror podcast on virtually every social media platform, I think Brian is going to break into a song.
Brian does not sing. Do I get like a little, what was that? I don't even know what the fucking instrument he was playing. I could like.
Wait, hold on.
Clint's going to get an instrument.
Oh, this is a bit now. This is a whole thing. He skedaddled out of his chair to go find his instrument. That was some Scooby-Doo. Bunk, 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 bunk.
Brian.
You got a guitar?
Take it away. Sing, goddammit.
If you like your horror movies, don't forget to like and subscribe. Check out Mishmash for all your Michigan horror happenings.
Amazing.
You're a little off tune there, Clint.
You're not in tune, buddy.
No. And
Trying to balance things out here. You know what? I'm done. Enough. No one's ever going to listen to this show ever again.
Wait, people were listening?
Yeah. Not anymore. They turned that shit off. If I was there, he'd have probably done like the honky tonk man and hit me over the head with the guitar at the end.
I would love to see that. He's going to get more instruments.
No, not with that one. That was too expensive. I'll go grab one of the cheapies and smash you over the head with that. Oh, we're still recording. We haven't left yet. Bye.
No.
Bye.
Hey, what's wrong with you, man? Show some fucking respect for the dead, will you?